Welcome to the RAND CRE Show. Commercial real estate with no stone left unturned.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the RAND CRE Show. I'm your host, Mike Taravella, and I have the honor and privilege of having Lindsay Haynes on our show. So Lindsay is the founder and CEO of Metric Property Management. I think every person I've ever talked, I've heard Lindsay months before actually meeting her from every investor in the pretty much of the Jake and Gino Texas market, and they have absolutely raved about her. So it was good to meet her in person last year. She has 21 years of experience in property management and still does it with a bubbly, smiley face and executes like an all-star. And from 2021, went from 250 units to 2,600 units and 41 locations. So absolute rock star. Lindsay, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we got to meet on the property tour at one of your clients' properties, and just seeing your operation, we're internally managed. So they're, you know, I think not many third parties, I feel like, operate how you and your dream team do it. So it was just amazing to see how much you care, the ownership aspect in the sense of taking pride as if it were your own, the just collaboration with your contractors, your team, residents from top down. Everyone is phenomenal. And so I just wanted to have, would love to have you on because just, we don't have third party property management experience because we do it ourselves, but we'd love to help just our listeners out there, help navigate the do's and don'ts and to make your life easier as well so that people know when to call the you and your dream team.
Well, you guys are brave that you graduated and you're doing your own management, because I talk to so many people that their goal is to manage on their own and they just want to kind of get a head start and learn. And it's always like, for the short term, we're going to use third party management, but then we're going to manage our own property when we get it under control. And then they figure out that it's more work than you realize, and that their time and effort is better spent looking for the next deal. So kudos to you for managing your own properties.
I do not manage. I just wanted to make that very, very clear. Our team does. So our principal, Jake Stenziano, I think his process, similar to yours, just like having control of the process was a big component. And I myself never want to manage anything I own because it is so hard. Property management is so hard, and it is the number one reason why a deal goes well. It's not your underwriting. It's 100% your property management is the reason why the deal works or does not work.
I humbly agree.
So yeah, having that team in place is so huge. How did you grow so quickly? I feel like that's, you know, I heard a little bit about your story when we met in person because you were in Indiana, mentioning Indiana, but we'd love to see kind of Metric's hyper growth. And we talked a little bit offline, but it doesn't seem like it's ever going to slow down, like in true property management form.
So I left my high paying W-2 in property management. I had started two local firms kind of as the second person in charge. And then I got the opportunity to develop the processes and select the systems and do some business development. And after doing that for two firms independently, I said, I can do this. And you know, you don't know what you don't know until you jump in and figure it out. There were a lot of things that I didn't realize were involved in running a property management firm. So I met this group out of Canada that had just bought a property in Evansville, Indiana. And it was like 9 o'clock at night on a Facebook group. And one of them was like, can I call you? Cause I said, I love Evansville. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, when you're new, like the answer to everything is yes.
Yeah.
So I just told him, you know, call this contractor and this is what I would do for marketing, and just freely shared everything that I could to help him be successful. And that's what it's about, like giving to others and it all comes back. And
yeah.
The next day they said, can we have a conference call? And I did like a 2-hour Zoom and basically crash course how to market your property. And here's your reno strategy and here's what you should do. And they said, can we pay you for your time? And I said, no, I'm not going to take a fee for an hour's worth of consulting, but you know, let's stay in touch. If you want to do something short term, I'll guide you along the way. And then they brought me into the partnership. And 2 years later, we just sold the property last month.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. That was my first full cycle deal. I say full cycle, I'm taking credit for it because I was like a week into it, but I'm taking credit. So
it still counts.
Right? It counts. So then I was in like February, I was given 20 units and 28 units in Austin, and I had to manage it myself. You know, metric was Lindsay, and that was it. And failure wasn't an option. I couldn't drive to the property and show every single time. So I was doing self-guided tours before it was cool. really started to automate processes and push residents to go completely digital, really focus on social media marketing. And that property was 60% occupied and carrying delinquency. And within 6 weeks, we were 100% occupied. And lucky me, a couple of local brokers were LPs on that deal. So when they started getting checks, they started paying attention. Moving on, I met Nick Amaluxen, and I think I harassed him for about 9 months to give me an opportunity. And I'm sure it was a huge leap of faith because all I had was 48 units in Austin, but I'm begging for it. And he was in a position where he was ready for a change. His portfolio was struggling too. I won't tell you where, but we completely flipped
the
it
chuckle
around.
Chuckle says it all.
Yeah. Right. You know, two of the properties only took about 6 weeks to completely stabilize. The third property, you know, took 3 or 4 months to get to where he was budgeted for the year. But they've been cruising ever since. And
you said 6 weeks. I just want to make that clear because in property management, it's usually 6 months. You're saying weeks, correct?
Yeah. Now, I mean, to be fair, they're smaller assets, you know, under 70 units, but yeah.
It still counts.
Yeah. So our principles are like super simplistic. Just keep it simple, stupid. You know, the most important things matter and the rest of the stuff can come later. I want to polish the property and I want to have fun resident events, but you can't do any of that unless you know, cash is king, heads in beds, and, you know, treat it like a sales position instead of order taking. And so we really try to streamline and simplify all of our administrative responsibilities and on-site duties and support people out in the field so that they can focus on the most important thing, like turning an apartment quick and knocking on doors and social media marketing. And then when those things start to solve, then we can evolve and refine and, you know, make it pretty and perfect. But really the first thing is just, you know, get creative and aggressive about the most important stuff.
That's so awesome. And I just hearing property management, there's like, I think everyone tries to overcomplicate it. I mean, from the asset manager role, everyone's like, I manage the property manager, but no, it's a collaboration. And just hearing the simplicity of heads in beds, have them pay and then refine. It's just like a very simplistic piece. And it's just like, no one, when they talk about property management, breaks it down that quick and easy and just have it flow.
Yep. And the next one is quick turns. I mean, vacancy kills. And I don't know how many, every property that we take over is, you know, 60 or 70% occupied with units that have been vacant for 60 days. I mean, if you simplify it and streamline it, we turn units in 7 days all the time.
Yeah.
So now that's the expectation. And you start to see the immediate improvement from saving on vacancy loss.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, and those are like the two biggest hurdles, vacancy, delinquency, and turn costs. And if you're doing it fast, that means you probably have to have most of your inspections front loaded and the materials ordered, especially during the supply chain issues, right? So it's having that expectation of it takes 7 days. How can we get it done in 7 days? And what do we need to do to not change the goalposts and be like, okay, 10 days is fine, 14 days is fine. It's 7 days every time.
7 days every time. And you can only be successful in this day and age, if you prepare, like you mentioned. So like we have a task management platform that we use. We love Asana. And every single week there's a task that's, you know, walk units vacating in 30 days. We can't always know about a move out. We're going to have unanticipated move outs, but if we have a notice to vacate, we can walk it 30 days in advance. There's a form that we fill out and we document the deficiencies of the apartment, everything that it's going to take to turn it. And we take a video and they attach the video to that form and it becomes a follow-up task that they put on a make ready board that we keep in OneDrive and they place the order 30 days in advance. So I'd never want to hear a manager say, well, I couldn't get the appliances. If you order them 30 days in advance, then you would have the appliances. But it takes looking ahead and understanding the world that we live in now. You have to be prepared.
Yeah, which I think is like the hardest part. Like, and I think that's a good point of what you said of like, we can't do it every time because there's just, it's property management still. There's still chaos and entropy that happens and unheard of, and you're still taking care of people. But I think it's being proactive, not reactive of like, oh man, we have this notice to vacate. What's going on? And, you know, I think a lot of, or some property managers have an idea, but not the whole form locked, loaded, and ready to go. Like your team, making sure they're executing as well.
So then, you know, if we have a property that's really struggling and needs remote assistance from anywhere, I can log in and look at that task and watch the video myself and order the parts and materials for them if I have to. So it allows us to really operate like on a regional level. And maybe there's somebody that's better at that and loves that. And so we put them on that kind of responsibility. And then we have somebody who has a sales personality and they're better at social media marketing and leasing and closing. And we put them on that. So we have everybody in the regions involved in some aspect on every property.
I think we were at the property and where your times were talking about like TikTok leasing and just going, I wouldn't say viral, but like getting really good traction with TikTok when it comes to leasing out some units.
We make some funny TikTok videos featuring the maintenance guys. Those are the most popular ones. It's really hard for the maintenance guys because they're shy. They don't want to be featured on that, but those are the most entertaining ones. New silly TikTok videos. I'm looking forward to having some time. I've got ideas about TikTok videos for multifamily investors. Those are going to be comical. I've got some ideas for apartment locators. Those are going to be great. So
I want Nick on the multifamily one. If okay, Nick Amaluxen will get on a TikTok, I will get TikTok.
It's addicting.
But that, and that's the thing is, right, it's property management. I think it's trying to find those new innovative ways to meet your audience. And it's like any other business, I'm sure it's up for disruption. And just hearing of these different methods to get residents or to keep it fun, to keep it light, it promotes your branding because then you have an online presence and brand, which when you think of property management is someone you write a check to. So it's just like a very powerful and just a new dynamic on how you're changing property management in Texas and the other 41 locations.
A lot of our clients have access to our task management platform and can see our daily tasks, our weekly tasks, monthly things, special projects. Some of them contribute tasks directly to that, which is super cool. So that is streamlined and really, I think, built trust. I mean, they can see everything that we're doing day to day. So yeah, that's a disruptor for me. I mean, 10 years ago, I had like a notebook and
just hundreds of sticky notes, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I didn't have to, I mean, we move so fast and we grow so fast that if I didn't have that in place, I could not possibly have grown the way that we did. Yeah. And then, you know, you can't do everything. It's such an imperfect business. And then you got to come back to stuff. And it's really easy to overlook that stuff and never get back to it. But that keeps it all in line and all in one place. So I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So now to kind of change gears, because clearly you're just building this amazing machine of just automated systems. Like you said, anyone can come in, do the job, get it done and know how to do the job. So for those looking to use third party and it's their first deal, when should that investor pick up the phone? Because obviously they can't call you every step of the way because you're out saving the world. But when should a potential client reach out to you when looking at a deal, or is it under contract before, and kind of just walk through kind of some of the do's and don'ts that you've seen your clients do?
So back in the day, I used to attend all the tours when somebody was kicking tires and looking at properties. And I did a lot of underwriting assistance, but we're too big for that at this point. So I would say before you put an offer in, you probably want to check with property management and just validate the rents that you've set, or ask them, what do you think is achievable as is, or, you know, alternate scenario, if we do this to the property, what do you think the rental potential is? And that's an easy, you know, 15-minute research task that any property manager should be able to do. And then you'll have like your standard operating expenses per door that you plug in, but every region and every property is a little bit different. And I always have recommended changes whenever somebody sends me their underwriting on operating expenses. You know, how big's the lot? Is there security necessary? I mean, did you dig in and do you know what the rubs is? So send a completed underwriting and have them, you know, validate both of those things before you put in an offer, because that could significantly change what the property is worth. And then, of course, on due diligence, 100% unit walk, 100% lease file audits, and the property manager really should head a lot of that up for you.
Yeah, that's great, because on the front end, you don't want to, for the investor, you don't want to come in thinking, all right, it's going to take four grand a unit to operate it. And then you call Lindsay and she's like, actually, it's like $6,000 because this is, and security and all this other stuff, which then changes your underwriting, ruins the report with the broker because you got it under contract and it's no good. But also, to Lindsay's point, is like, for CapEx budgets, the last thing you want to do as the property management group is come in and go, I get zero money to fix this up, but I'm supposed to increase rents $300-$400. So it's like, it creates a lose-lose by you just not being proactive and going through and treating your property management as if they were your partner.
Yeah. And you might be looking at 100 deals a week, but your property manager can't look at 100 deals a week. So it probably needs to be one that you're pretty serious about.
Yeah. And I think too, it's just a good level set, because I'm not out in the field, but I can see the numbers from how we operate. But how we operate in Tennessee is different than Texas versus different than Kentucky versus Evansville. So like you said, even within every city, every submarket of that city, I'm sure there's different operational risks and different expense categories when it comes to it. Like Texas insurance, first time I saw a deal in Texas, I was like, why is their insurance so high? And it's not in Houston. I was like, what is happening there? Mm-hmm. It's very, very, very different. It's not bad, just different.
It's different, yeah.
So what are some other things that, some do's and don'ts than working with, what are some things that your clients have done for you that you've really resonated with and liked how they've operated in like a relationship, like working with you as a property manager?
You know, we start with a really clearly defined contract. And make sure that there's some kind of orientation. We understand roles and responsibilities. You know, for instance, I'm going to hire the property manager. That's what the contract says, the on-site property manager. But do you want an opportunity to interview that person? You know, what's a billable item? What's not a billable item? What are my spending parameters? And who can execute contracts? Do you have any hot buttons about contracts that you would like for us to redline before they get to you? So really just going over the contract and making sure that you understand duties and roles and responsibilities is where you start a successful relationship. But my clients are great about being sports and getting on our weekly KPI calls. So I could build a report in my software and have a one-page report with the KPIs that I want to see, but I refuse to do it. I make the on-site teams pull those report series and dig in and really analyze. And then we have a template that they complete, like a KPI stoplight report. And we drag our clients onto a KPI call every single week. And we have the property manager, the on-site property manager, present that data and information to them.
That's awesome.
I love that.
That is awesome.
Love that, because they put it together. So if they're putting it together and they realize that they've got 7 vacant apartments and nothing's ready, they're going, I have to say this out loud to him tomorrow, or I have to tell her that we have no delinquency improvement week over week. So I mean, they're thinking ahead how that conversation's going to go, and it's motivating. And then they're presenting it, and then they're also making commitments. You know, I may have 7 vacant available right now, and they're not ready, but next week I'm committed to turning apartment 101, 102, and 103. And saying it and having those goals is motivating, and they're going to do everything that they can to hit the mark the next week. So putting up with my KPI calls and taking an hour out of their week every week has probably been the biggest tool, because they're also seeing like what our struggles are. It's such an imperfect business, and it happens. So yeah. Just hearing it out of our mouths and like seeing that we're passionate, we're trying to do the best that we possibly can for them, that, you know, they give us grace because of that. So
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And I love how you have to just say drag, because I'm so numbers are, I'd be like, I get to like just hear it. And then just having the assistant property manager and property manager is huge, because they're becoming leaders and taking control. And I use the analogy for our internally for us, I go, it's like Shark Tank. If you don't know your numbers, you're not going to get investment, and you're not growing and becoming a leader within, you know, our property management. So hearing just having to report to the owners is like such an awesome aspect on that weekly call. So that's a very good feat to the fire of, plus it gets FaceTime with your owners so that they feel like it's all part of the team. So it's like a very like just well-rounded system that I've never even thought of. That's awesome. So
that's what we have. It's not my staff's favorite tool. I'll tell you that right now. It's not their favorite.
Well, I mean, Zeta, it's kind of like the proud parent moment, or like, because we're working on that with our accountant to present the numbers. We're like, I don't want to speak. We're like, well, guess what? You're going to have to speak. You know the numbers. You're going to have to become a leader. And that's how you do it. So what are some things that's really just kind of grinded your gears with that your clients do, or expectations, or just in general when working with like a third party property manager?
You know, I would say I have a handful of clients that really, they don't review and understand their financial packages, which is unfortunate, because there's so much information there. I answer questions that are, I don't expect you to read all 57 pages of the financial package, but there's a couple of key reports in there that really kind of tell you what's happening. Occasionally we have conversations and I can tell they just never even open them. So I would say, if you're struggling with understanding the difference between cash and accrual accounting, or you don't understand why, you know, the property management software says that you made this much this month, but you have this much in the bank. Slow down and ask questions and educate yourself and learn it, and keep trying and asking those questions, even if they seem dumb, until you do get it, because there's so much important information in there. And I've taken over properties where, I mean, gosh, I was on the phone yesterday and I asked a gentleman, I said, how are you going to give these to your CPA? I mean, it's January and these financials are so bad. And a lot of the properties
that you as the property manager should not be telling, like, that should not be coming from you. That's the scary part.
I know, these are so bad. And we all answered Uncle Sam, you've got to get them ready by April 15th, and your CPA is going to charge you a whole lot more than your property manager. And those things, they compound over months. And before you know it, you have a hot mess in your hands. When you go to sell, you've got this messy set of financials that you can't really present to someone without a whole bunch of excuses. So open the financial reports, like understand, you know, cash versus accrual, like check your balance sheets and make sure that they're right. Like actually read the general ledger and make sure you're not getting billed back for, maybe it's a mistake and it's the wrong property. We do that every now and then, but we scrub and we fix it. Maybe it's a management company expense that should not even be on your general ledger. But if you don't take the time to scrub through those things, you'll never know. And then ask them for budget variance comments, make them explain, why we did, how we did on the income and the expenses in their words. It doesn't even have to be formal or institutional level, but, you know, tell me what happened this month.
Yeah, no, those are all super important. And it's funny because leaving the accounting world, I was like, just like drilled in all of these things. And it's just like, now it's like, oh, I'm so thankful for this experience, because not many people understand the cash versus accrual basis and just that financial. And it's not like crazy hard or complex. You don't need a CPA, but just sit down for like an hour a week and just kind of understand the accounting, because your rental income on the accrual side versus your cash basis could be very, very different. And then it's just like, well, what happened? So, and just asking questions. I think that's the biggest thing is just, if you don't know the difference, just ask people who have that answer. It doesn't have to be Lindsay, but like just kind of ask the network of investors that you're with and see how they're combating it. Because like Lindsay said, you don't have to have a PhD in accounting or a master's or a CPA. But if you look at the few critical numbers, kind of know if you're going in the right direction or not.
And there are reports that you can point to, and that's where you hide the bodies. I mean, I can make your financial statement say whatever I want it to. but if you know how to drill in and look for those kind of things, then everybody stays honest. So
yeah, that's super true. What GL do you use? AppFolio?
I use Resmin.
Resmin. Okay. I haven't heard of that one. That's good to know, because in the world of property management, there's so many different things that everyone does. So is there anything else that someone should know what not to, like when working with a proper property manager, the do's or don'ts, or anything else that kind of comes to mind of what an owner or investor should do?
You know, I love when owners pop in. Don't pop in every single time. Schedule some of your visits because it's fun for the on-site staff to like go through like the chaos of getting ready for an owner visit. You know, they enjoy having the red carpet out and really getting ready to show off. So schedule some of them, but pop in sometimes too. And when you pop in, you know, chat with residents and yeah, don't tell them you're the owner. Never tell them you're the owner.
Never
tell them you're the owner. Just say, you know, say.
I work with Lindsay.
Yeah, I work in the owner's office. You say that, but just don't say you are the owner, whatever you do. But ask residents, how's it going in your home? You know, take it with a grain of salt. I always say, like, if one person says it, nah, you know, but if two people say it, maybe we should pay attention. If three people say it, then we have to pause and we might have a problem. But it's good to like take that pulse and say, how's it going in your home, and do it right in front of the manager. They know you're asking the question. And again, it keeps everybody operating above board and you can kind of take the temperature. Don't entertain resident complaints if they escalate to you. If it's truly a risk thing, you're going to know that you should get involved, but the little tedious stuff, or you just, that needs to get pushed right back down to the property manager and you need to go spend your time on finding the next deal. Yeah. Don't let the staff escalate to you too. I always joke that only the strong survive it metric. And we try to keep people with respect and dignity, but this is a tough business and our expectations are super high. And sometimes it just doesn't work out. The site staff really works for the property management company. They don't work for the owner. And I tell my owners this, I tell my site staff this, you don't work for them. You work for me. I work for them. There's no getting around me. Chain of command is really important. The moment that you circumvent that, you're going to take all the resident phone calls and the staff phone calls. And if you do that, you might just want to manage your property and plunge the toilets too.
No, that's super, and seeing it live, right? So like, I didn't know Nick was coming in and just got to just be a fly on the wall, and just seeing how your entire team was just like adding to Asana, looking at that, just like, it felt like a full court press on like everything going on. And it was a relatively like short turnaround from purchase to where it is today. But it was just amazing to see just the on-site, like you said, on tip-top shape. Were your team, like from you to regional, and I forget the third person who was part of like the executive team, but just everyone was like full court press, like working with the contractor, pointing out final punch list, getting Nick's ideas of what to do with the property next. Every detail from like laundry room organization to window to bulletin billboard, next renovation, like tick. It was just like amazing how all of that was condensed in such a short time, because you're being respectful to, you know, the owner's time. But it's just like, we've thought of all of these things through, and it's presented as like, Nick, owner, what do you think? And it was just like really cool kind of just to be a fly on the wall and be like, whoa.
Yeah, I feel like we have the secret sauce. Like, I know how I like to decorate clubhouses. I know what I do for full furniture. I know what kind of bulletin board I want. And I don't really have time to repeat myself. So we've literally like already built the lists and they're already like in carts, and I can just give it to my admin and say, hey, handle this, and it's just done. And then we can go on to the next thing. But that, again, that's Asana and that's Amazon for Business.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I'm super happy we got to follow up from that tour to now and just be on the podcast and help promote your amazing business and your dream team. What's like the one thing for property management kind of like a year from now you see being the next kind of disruptor in property management that you're kind of working on?
You know, labor is a huge huge challenge right now. Unfortunately, we've had to reach out to clients and say the leasing office has to be closed this week. You know, the schools in our areas are closing down because of just staff shortages. And that's just every single industry, and it affects ours pretty significantly too. Every time I turn around, 20% of our team is out with the flu or COVID. And so that puts an additional burden on the other 80% of the team. I say that, but we probably have 20% open positions half of the time. So it's been really challenging to recruit people where, you know, I can't pay a ton more just to get somebody in the seat, but we're trying to spin it like, you know, culture and benefits and growth opportunity and really, you know, inspire people to want to work for us. So that's been one way to look at it, but it's still just labor all around is a huge challenge. And with that, I think people really have to start looking at the salaries that they're offering now. I told somebody the other day, $1,300 a unit to underwrite for payroll. And they said, no way. Gone are the days of $1,000 a unit for payroll. It's just never going back there.
Yeah.
You have to love on people and make them want to be there and take good care of them, because we're asking a lot of them in the environment that we're in right now. So really labor, number one challenge that we have.
Yeah. And I think with your seeing your culture, I think your team is, you're creating generals and leaders from like top down and bottom up, right? So I think that culture aspect will come, and we have a similar circumstance where it's like, you know, very quickly if that person is in or out, and if they're on the way out, it's like, a lot of times on the property performance, I go, it was this week, just because of because marketing slipped or this slipped. Like, there's just so many things that we're measuring. And I was like, there's one property where I'm like, it was this week. And then the week after that person left. So I'm like, this was the pain point. Because it's just like, our properties are so ran. And we're just a high demand area. It's like, we're not going to pretend like the market doesn't help being in East Tennessee, but it's you know, we can quickly identify. And like, as you said, with labor shortages, there's always problems. So for those who are owners and are like, man, they're short a person, everyone is short people. So just be nice to your property management company and just be empathetic a little bit. If the excuses keep rolling though, that's a different circumstance. But if it's a labor shortage, it's happening everywhere in property management, because it is a hard business.
Yeah. Yep. And only the strong survive.
Exactly. Same as the investing side. So Lindsay, what is your one investor pro tip for our listeners out there who are listening to this podcast?
Well, you know, I'm huge on setting goals and documenting that too. You know, and so if things aren't going the way that you think that they should, you know, ask and trust, but verify. You know, set goals. And hold people accountable. It's okay to raise your hand and say, I think we can do better. It's okay to raise your hand and say, you know, what resources do you need to be more successful? What's it going to take to get here? And ask what their opinion is. That value their opinion and their feedback, come up with a plan together and move forward, but set goals and hold people accountable, speak up for yourself. And, you know, your property manager should run the property as if it were their own property, the way that they would. So hold them accountable. And it's my advice.
Kick ass and take names.
Yeah.
That's awesome. No, I appreciate it, Lindsay, and just look forward to just one, staying more connected so I can help in any way possible for your business. But two, I know you're continuing to do amazing things, and we don't have too many property managers on here, but the ones we do, we make sure are absolute all-stars, and you're definitely one of them. So thank you so much for your time. If our listeners wanted to become a client, besides listening to everything before, and want you to run their properties, what's the best way they can reach out to you?
My website is metricpropertymanagement.com, M-E-T-R-I-C, propertymanagement.com. My cell phone's listed there, and email, so you can get in touch with me there. And we manage Dallas, Waco, Austin, San Antonio, a couple of other small cities outside of the 35 corridor in Illinois. So
awesome. Well, we'll have the website on the show notes so people don't have to look for it. But thank you so much, Lindsay. Appreciate your time. you're going to have an amazing 2022 and beyond, and look forward to helping in any way I can. And if anyone has questions for me, please reach out to me at miket@randcre.com. And until then, we will see you next week.